Spies in Russia could have been a plot from a Russian drama. A rogue soldier withdraws his units and leaves the battlefront in order to carry out a coup. He takes over a key base in southern Russia, which is essential for the war in Ukraine. And whilst this is all going on, Moscow is put under high alert for a potential coup. And as we approach the end of the plot, an agreement is struck and everything comes to an end. Putin is still in power, the army has maintained its ranks, and the coup plotter has gone into exile. So it was a fascinating weekend, and we've got Geopolity founder Adnan Khan to make sense of it all. How are you keeping, Adnan?
I'm good, Yusuf. Yes, as you mentioned, I'm recovering from this fascinating weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I think, tell us what we witnessed over the weekend, Adnan.
In a nutshell, Yusuf, we effectively saw a mutiny. We saw a mutiny by a military unit, which happened to be the Wagner unconventional force in this case. And the mutiny wasn't actually against Putin. It was actually against the defense minister. And what we see, the actual demands of the coup plotters was that the defense minister and the army general, they should go. And this hasn't come out of nowhere, although it got wall-to-wall coverage in the Western media. This has actually been ongoing for weeks and months with Prigozhin, the Wagner leader, and Sergei Shoigu, the defense minister, and then the head of the army at the moment, the chief of army staff, is Gerasimov. There's actually been tension between these three for actually quite a while. They've had a tense relationship. So what we find is late Friday night, the Wagner units, they left the battlefront in Ukraine and they went into southern Russia. So in any other country, Yusuf, this is treason. You've left the battlefront, you know, you're out of war. So if you leave the battlefront, that front can be overrun by the enemy. So they left where they were in eastern Ukraine and they went to southern Russia, which isn't a long journey. And what they did was they took over the base in Rostov-on-Don, which is the southern city of Russia. It's also where I think 90% plus of the communications and the whole military planning is being run from regarding Ukraine. And what Prigozhin announced was that he was going on a long march. There's been quite a few long marches going on recently, and that no one should stand in his way. And then really for a few hours, nothing actually happened. What we saw after a few hours was on the media, there were images and video coverage that Rostov-on-Don had been taken over. You had Wagner units there. At the time, you couldn't actually tell the difference between military units and Wagner units because they dressed the same at the time. But we had an interesting scenario where army units were at the petrol station putting fuel into their vehicles and Wagner units were undertaking their mutiny. So I'm not sure how that would look on the street, but that was the very funny scenario that was going on at the time. What happened then was a lot of talk began Saturday morning that these Wagner units are moving from the south of Russia to Moscow. Now, obviously, this is where it gets serious because if you're going to do a coup, you need to overthrow the seat of the regime, which is Moscow. So they got to a town called Renesis, which is about 200-300 miles from Moscow. And really, after then, their front petered out. Eventually, they got about 150 miles from Moscow. So because Russia is such a big country, being 150 miles from a town isn't actually that far. We now know, Yusuf, there were several engagements. Wagner shot down some helicopters. And they themselves, the Wagner forces, were also on the receiving end of attacks by actual military units, Russian armed forces. So by Saturday morning, Putin gave a 5-minute speech. We accused Prigozhin of committing treason. And then by Saturday night, Prigozhin called off the march in the name of stopping bloodshed and the fact that his problem was not with Putin, his problem was with the defense head and the head of the army. And then from there on, we heard that he's now gone into exile in Belarus. The Belarusian leader got involved and intermediated between the military generals that had a problem with him, between the Kremlin, and between the Wagner forces itself. So I think for about 24 hours, there was a coup atmosphere. The Western media were really excited because if this is happening during the Ukraine war, it would have a massive impact on how Russia would prosecute this war. In the end, there was no coup. I think it's debatable if there was even a coup attempt. That's why I'm calling it a mutiny at the moment. This can possibly change, Yusuf, as more information comes out. So Putin is still in power. The defense chief, Shoigu, is still the defense minister. The head of the army is still General Gerasimov. The only person that's gone is Prigozhin, the Wagner leader. So that's where we stand.
So a lot to take in, Dan. I guess the biggest question is, you've touched on it, what was Prigozhin's issue?
So Prigozhin's issue, Yusuf, I think the best way to look at this, we need to go back a bit. Wagner is an unconventional unit. So it's not part of Russia's main army. So you find, talk about this, Wagner's role has really been in Africa, outside, far away from Russia. This war in Ukraine is being overwhelmingly prosecuted by Russia's main military force. However, because the war was going really bad, the Kremlin got Wagner involved. Now, Wagner consists of many experienced retired army officers, so they did a pretty good job in the Donbass area. But what actually happened was, end of last year, it was the town near Bakhmut where they're fighting now. The Russian forces were held up for a while, and the Wagner forces came in and ended the battle, brought an end to it, they won. And what happened was, the Wagner forces and the Wagner leader were taking credit for the victory. And this really ticked off the defense minister, Shoigu, and Gerasimov, the general. But as far as they were concerned, they took on most of the casualties, and this unconventional force is taking all the credit. That's where the division started. So what started happening then was, is supplies to Wagner started to dry up, and munitions started to dry up. In a number of areas Wagner forces were fighting, they were running out of ammunition. So Prigozhin started making a lot of social media posts, social media speeches, where he was getting very animated that we are being screwed over, we're not getting ammunition. So this was building up for a while. Then last week, you saw two things happen. The first was, is some Wagner forces were attacked by artillery, and they concluded the direction the artillery came in, it couldn't have come from Ukraine, it came from Russian forces. So as far as Wagner were concerned, they just got attacked by the Russian army. Then the second thing was, the defense minister gave Wagner an ultimatum last week that you have to sign military contracts. You have to become military contractors. And that has implications. Until now, Wagner has been operating in this semi-autonomous manner. So this is really what's been going on. And this was really the run-up to what's happened. So technically, this was a challenge to Putin. By challenging Shoigu, who is a Putin loyalist, you are challenging Putin. But Prigozhin was very careful. He didn't actually attack or say anything against Putin. He actually made it very clear that the general and the defense minister, they are lying and they're not giving the whole story to Putin. That's the angle he actually took. So really, there's a feud between different personnel and different units. And then over the weekend, you sort of spilled out into what we saw as a mutiny.
Now, if we just get some of the details ironed out, you touched on it again, but what role has the Wagner actually been playing in the war, first of all? And the second thing is, how did Prigozhin get himself into such an influential position where he could do something like this?
So Prigozhin has a very interesting background. He's been a bit of a del boy. He's been a cook. He's been a video seller. And he's got himself into a position where he is the unofficial official arm of the Russian state. So Wagner has really grown in profile over the years, because you find them in the Central African Republic, you find them in Mali, you find them in Libya, you find them in all these conflicts around the world where Russia's main military can't actually go because of a lack of capability. So these unconventional forces, they've been doing the legwork in these faraway territories. That's how they profile. They really built up their profile in the West. The link between them and the Kremlin is a bit opaque. It's something that they've not actually made clear. What we do know is the FSB, so this is the former KGB, they really helped set up Wagner, and they've been providing intelligence to Wagner. So it's down to Wagner now to get troops, to get arms, to get ammunition, to get hardware in order for them to fight. So when the war was going really badly in Ukraine, it was only natural for Putin to call Wagner to come and get involved in the war. Now, Wagner, apparently on paper, has about 25 to 30,000 forces. I find that quite hard to believe. I think it's probably half of that at most. Even the march to Moscow, at most you're looking at two columns. You're not looking at thousands. So, you know, Wagner doesn't have the burden of being a huge military that you have to supply. It's a unconventional So they are lightly armed. They can be deployed very, very quickly. And because Wagner consists of retired army officials, retired KGB guys, Wagner really does have the best of the best. Whilst if you look at the Russian military, the best of the best is the exception. Vast majority are not very good. They're badly trained. And we've seen that play out in Ukraine. So that's why Wagner does stand out from Russia's overall military, because Wagner has got the best of the best of recent history from Russia's military who have actually joined them. So Wagner is involved in Ukraine because the Russian military is doing really, really bad. And Prigozhin has really done a good job of building their profile. He constantly takes pictures, puts them on social media. He props up, or Wagner props up, all different parts of the world. So wherever Wagner goes, the assumption is this is Russian influence. So that's why Wagner is quite important. And you know what happened over the weekend does have implications.
So if we go back to the main story, it seems like Prigozhin, he made his move. He himself changed his mind. Obviously, there must have been other things going on. The big question for me is, what did the regime actually do to respond to his initial move?
So the regime for a country that takes its time and isn't very efficient, actually what you find is on this occasion, they actually move very, very quickly. So you find a couple of things. Firstly, the Kremlin very quickly got high-ranking officials to do videos and get them out online. So General Sorovikin, who was the second general in charge of the military invasion of Ukraine, he very quickly made a video. You had a few other corps commanders. They were forced to make videos. So effectively, they were disassociating themselves from this particular coup. Now, that's quite important, Yusuf, because if they had come out in support of this, that might have led to other elements of the army joining Wagner as well. So by doing this, it really undermined Wagner very, very quickly. Then we know Putin, for example, he very quickly on Saturday morning did a 5-minute video. And it was quite interesting because he actually called this treason. Now, that's quite significant because you're saying an army unit fighting Ukraine has committed treason. So if Prigozhin was trying to get wider support from the Russian military, that won't help. The fact that Putin's calling him out really didn't actually work. And probably the final thing that's probably very important is the FSB didn't join the coup. The FSB, which is the Secret Service, they are the protector of the state. If they had joined the coup, if they had come out and supported it, that would have had big implications. So by the FSB not doing that, by Putin going on TV, and by getting high-ranking officials to talk against this mutiny, it really undermined it. So really, the regime didn't have to do anything physical. What they had to do was just show that all the high-ranking important people in Russia, they don't support it. And as a result, that played a key role in undermining this mutiny.
How could the coup have succeeded?
So there's a couple of things here, Yusuf. The coup could have succeeded. They did certain things, and the coup could have succeeded if certain things didn't happen the way they did. Obviously, in a coup attempt, it's a very fast-moving environment. A lot of things can happen. I mean, the one that comes to mind, Yusuf, is 2016, the Turkey coup, because it played out in the evening online and on TV. So you can see it in motion. Most coups, really, by the time an announcement is made, the coup's already over. Now, firstly, it could have succeeded if you got wider support from the army. So we had an interesting scenario, Yusuf, when Wagner forces took over Rostov-on-Don, where the southern city, where the whole war has been prosecuted from in Ukraine. There was actually little opposition. Now, I think there's a couple of reasons for this. Firstly, I think there was the fog of war. When Wagner troops, they are embedded and fighting alongside Russian troops. If you walk down the road, you can't tell the difference between who's a Wagner soldier and who's a normal Russian soldier. So when Wagner forces were going into this town and going into official buildings, it's likely that everyone around there just saw this as another day. They didn't necessarily see it as a coup. So, but the problem was, is this is the south of Russia. The seat of Russia is in Moscow. If you want to do a coup, you have to undertake the action that show you've overthrown the regime in Moscow. So by not being in the capital, that went against them. By not getting support from the wider army, that went against them. If any general came on TV and said Putin's sold out, the war's going really badly, that would have helped the actual coup effort. It looks as though, from what I can see, the FSB didn't support this. Any support from the FSB would have really, really helped them. It would have given them intelligence. It seems as though, for the moment, that none of Putin's inner circle supported the coup as well. Now, if they were going to try to make this coup successful, they would have needed more important officials on their side. or they need those officials to publicly support them, or they don't stand in the way. Now, it's likely, Yusuf, I mean, again, a lot of information is still coming out. It is possible that his aim wasn't to overthrow the regime. What he's saying is that his problem was with the defense minister and the chief of general staff. So that's not necessarily a coup. That's more a mutiny or internal dispute. So these are probably just a few things. These are the most obvious things I can see at the moment. I mean, it's Monday today when we're recording this, and this has played out on Sunday, on Saturday and Friday evening. So I'm sure during the week and the weeks ahead, more information will come out, which will give us a clearer picture of what took place. How close did they get to see the regime, or, you know, was it really much worse than it looked? Because the Western media coverage, I mean, a common which media outlet was used, they were celebrating that Putin's being overthrown. You know, for them, their dream finally coming true. Similar to just a few weeks ago, they were congratulating the opposition in Turkey for winning the election because of the polls. And in the end, they had to eat American pie because it went the other way. So, yeah, it could have succeeded if, you know, a number of these things did happen, or if certain things did
happen. Now, obviously, the big question is, what impact will this have on the war in Ukraine? Because obviously, the Wagner, they're on the front line, and now they're not.
Yes. Yeah, so, as I mentioned, Yusuf, how many people there are in the units of Wagner, I think is debatable. All of the Russian military is deployed. Their reserves are deployed. They've just done a call up a few months ago. So Wagner probably don't make up a large proportion of Russia's overall forces. However, they are one of the most capable. So they've been fighting in Bakhmut at the moment, which has seen the most severe fighting. But the most important thing, Yusuf, is Ukraine has just started its counteroffensive. And in the middle of a counteroffensive, you had a number of units who left the front line and went to southern Russia to apparently undertake a coup. In that sense, this could have an impact. Now, if the coup was still going on, or if Putin was overthrown, then this would have a massive impact on the Ukraine war because those troops aren't there anymore. But it seems within, what, a day or two, the plotters have accepted a deal and leader of Wagner has gone into Belarus. So if the information we have at the moment turns out to be 100% correct, I don't think it's going to have much effect on the Ukraine effort, because this isn't some, there wasn't too much fighting. It's not led to divisions and the collapse of Russian forces, so they now can't fight in Ukraine. Really, this all took place within Russia, so it's an internal matter, really. And because it's being dealt with very quickly, or it's evolved very quickly, it shouldn't have a knock-on effect. Where it can have an effect, Yusuf, is on expectations and morale. Many Russian soldiers are people who were forced to go into the army. They did a call up a few months ago. These people may see this and think there's division within the army, and as a result, that might add to their morale being very low, and they may actually undertake some actions, maybe leave the army or stop fighting. If lots of units left the front line, you may have seen other units leave as well. As things go at the moment, I don't think, you know, the ball's in Ukraine's court. They've seen what's happened. Can you take advantage of it? Already last week, American officials were complaining that the counteroffensive by Ukraine actually going really, really slow. And it seems Russia has basically put up lots of obstacles and embedded equipment and done a lot of counter maneuvers that's made the counteroffensive really, really slow. So I think overall, Yusuf, from what I've seen at the moment, I don't think it's going to have a big impact. However, I accept I don't have all the information. Where I think it may have an impact, where I don't have information, is the impact on Russian military internally and on morale. If that's been affected big time, that could have a knock-on effect.
Now, with Prigozhin now in exile, where does it leave Wagner?
So, this is a very good question, Yusuf. What does this mean for Wagner's future? Now, Wagner is an arm of the Russian state. Its role primarily has been outside Russia. Its role has been to turn up in conflicts around the world, assert itself, become a player, and then Russia gets credit for this. So what you find is they're quite picky on where they get involved. They get involved in places where fighting will not be too intense. They're not fighting another conventional army. However, now they were fighting in Ukraine. So this, I think, complicates it a bit. You can't just get rid of Wagner. You can't just court-martial them. Well, in fact, Putin said he's ready. Let them off. He let them off the hook because he said Prigozhin, the perpetrator, and he's the one we actually need to deal with. So I think there'll probably be a new Wagner leader emerge. And Wagner is just too important for Russia's external strategy. They can't just wrap up. I think what the FSB and Putin will do now is do a purge of Wagner, get rid of all the potential problem guys within Wagner. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't Prigozhin who did this on his own. I'm sure he had elements who sided with him. So we'll have to see. But from a Russian perspective, you probably want to wrap this up pretty quickly because you're in the middle of a war in Ukraine. So in many ways, this is probably the worst thing that can happen in the middle of a war. You're prosecuting a war, you've got your supply lines in place, and then your troops start fighting each other, or your troops saying, we have to go back home and do a coup. That could lead to the capitulation of the army in the war that they're actually involved in. So I think probably the Russian state would probably take over Wagner, and they'd probably carry out a purge. But Wagner is just too important to put back on the shelf. So I think what Putin will do is present it as Prigozhin, the person, was the problem. We've got rid of the guy, and now it's normal business. Normal business should resume.
And finally, Adnan, where does this leave Putin and his regime?
I think firstly, Yusuf, I think we should be careful to draw lessons from what took place this weekend about Putin's strength or weakness. Purely because, you know, this it appears it wasn't a coup. The goals and aim were Prigozhin, who wanted Shoigu and Gerasimov gone. But that's not actually a coup. That's a, you could call it internal competition. Putin has dealt with it pretty quickly. There's not been literally zero bloodshed. It's been wrapped up within 2 or 3 days. So we'll have to see the next few days, the fallout. We'll have to see if Putin get rid of lots of people or not. I think Putin's regime will survive. I don't think this has had the impact the Western media were hoping or what they were actually propagating. It's probably the worst thing you could have as Putin in the middle of a war. It's probably not a good sign. But I think the regime will survive. And I think for the moment, it's within Russia, it doesn't seem to be that this is added to Putin's problems. It doesn't seem public opinions turn against Putin. It potentially could in the next few days. I mean, we're literally talking about this a day or so after it's been completed. So I think it's something we definitely need to watch. But on face value, from the information I have at the moment, it looks as though Putin's regime wasn't really under threat. And I think Putin's already moved very quickly, actually, to deal with any potential fallout. So, yeah, I think Putin's regime has survived. And, yeah, if everything remains equal, that should remain the same. And Putin's regime should continue. And then the war should continue in Ukraine.
Thank you for listening today. You can find out more information on this issue and many other issues if you access our website. I'm Yusuf. Thank you for listening.